Right, good morning, everyone. This is Sola Hong, the coordinator of Center for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Thanks for listening to our episode of the Diversity Podcast Season 2. It's my great pleasure today to have Dr. Thomas Thirth from the Department of Psychology to share his insights and experience as we recognize the Disability Awareness Month. So thank you so much, Thomas.
Thank you for doing this.
So what does a typical day look like being a psychology professor at Bemidji State University?
Oh, typically it, the routine is getting into the office and working on some writing or class preparation. I teach a couple days a week this fall semester. I have office hours. I go to meetings, committee meetings, and that sort of thing. And I spend a lot of time grading. That certainly fills up some time there. But just the regular routine of a faculty, I think it would probably look very similar across the university.
So what courses are you teaching now?
Well, this semester I teach social psychology. I teach intro psychology online. And then I teach two sections of psychology of disability, one of them online and one of them in person.
Is there any like research project you're working on as well?
I am, doing a couple things. One of the projects I'm working on with some students is figuring out what ableism looks like. So ableism and ableist beliefs, these are ideas that kind of correspond to our assumptions or our worldviews when it comes to what it means to be able-minded, able-bodied human. And so some of those assumptions are coming from cultural values. Some of them relate to beliefs about what the experience of disability is like. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of doing some work figuring out from interviews and also quantitative measures what ableism looks like. So that's the project that we're working on now.
And you mentioned that you also attended some committee meetings, and would you please tell more about your roles? And
yeah, so I'm a representative from the College of Individual and Community Health. Mm-hmm. Through the university, there oftentimes call for representatives from the different mm-hmm. colleges, and within the faculty association. There needs to be representation from faculty on these committees. So one of the committees I serve on is the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Committee. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. University-wide efforts to increase and support diversity, equity, inclusion. I also am on the Environmental Advisory Committee, which has an outlook towards environmental sustainability. Mm-hmm. Both of those things really overlap with each other in many ways within my research interest and my intellectual interest as a social and multicultural mm-hmm. psychologist.
Sure.
And then I'm doing a variety of efforts to increase support networks for faculty, staff, and students with disabilities. In order to make the university a more inclusive and positive place for disability community members. So things like
sure.
within the Faculty Association, the Disability Caucus, working mm-hmm. on getting an employee resource group for employees with accessibility needs mm-hmm. and a variety of things like that.
So how long have you been working in this area, and what made you go into this career you are in today?
This is my second year as a faculty member.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is my first faculty position out of graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I could say that in one way I've been at this for 2 years. In another way, I've been studying social psychology for close to 9-10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if not longer. I graduated from undergrad in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew at that point in time I wanted to become a social psychology faculty.
Yep.
And so I think looking back on it, one of the big turning points for me in my career interest was, well, when I was an undergrad, I wanted to be a neurologist
mm-hmm.
or a neuroscientist.
Yeah.
And I only figured that out probably my second year in
yeah.
undergrad. And at that point in time, I had kind of missed the cutoff or the window of time to take pre-med
okay.
course, a sequence of courses at
okay.
my college. And because people who wanted to become pre-med or
yeah.
in that way were very much, it seemed like they were interested from the first year on, and,
mm-hmm.
and you kind of had to get your classes if you wanted
right.
to graduate on time.
Right.
And I was a psychology major from the get-go. I knew I wanted to be in psychology. I just didn't know where.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a bunch of classes, neuroscience classes, biology of the mind, anatomy and physiology, all those kinds of classes, even though I didn't have a bio or chem
mm-hmm.
background.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think my outside the class experiences shaped my interest in,
mm-hmm.
and going to a liberal arts college, I was taking a lot of classes that were not disciplinary specific.
Yep.
So I you know, things like a class on racism, a study abroad, or I don't know if you can't call it study abroad because it was international.
Yeah.
But a month long class where we traveled the Southeast, and it was called The Theology of Martin Luther King Jr.
Sure.
So going around to different mm-hmm. Significant landmarks and places in the life of Martin Luther King Jr. And work of Martin Luther King Jr. And so actually what made me want to become a social psychologist is a growing interest that I was having in working towards social justice issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to study prejudice and racism
sure.
coming out of undergrad.
Yeah.
And that was an interest of mine. And it wasn't until I entered into my master's program,
uh-huh.
A two-year master's program, that I had a faculty member who I was working with and seeing if there was a potential shared interest. It turned out there wasn't. But he recommended to me,
mm-hmm.
well, we were talking about the work that I wanted to do, and I said I wanted to do prejudice research. And he said, you know, like with people with disabilities? And I said, no, I mean, I want to study racial prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, that's good, but I think that it would be also good to study prejudice against people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but I'm a person with a disability, and I don't want people to think that I'm biased or,
mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
have a... you know, you know, stake in
right.
my, you know, a personal stake, because
yep.
I feel
yeah.
like that was something that at the time that kind of looked bad
uh-huh.
or, you know, that sort of thing. And he said, no, you don't need to worry about that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that, you know, if you have a voice in this, you have a
sure.
experience, personal experience in this, and we need research that comes from these experiences, and
mm-hmm.
it raises new questions and that sort of thing. And so that's how I turned again. I went from somebody who is interested in neuroscience
uh-huh.
and working with brains to somebody who is interested in prejudice and racial prejudice to somebody who is focused on disability prejudice in that
yeah.
span of probably 3 to 4 years.
Got it. So, do you still remember the first day as a psychology professor?
Well, it's interesting because I had a teaching experience in graduate school, and so the being in the in front of a class, you know, that sort of thing wasn't as much of a shock to me. I do remember my first, it wasn't too long ago, you know, last year, I remember my first day, like, going to the president's,
startup meeting?
The startup meeting, yeah, whatever they call that. I do remember, you know, that, and that's a very vivid, that's going to be a very vivid memory, for me. Just in terms of coming to campus with all of these new colleagues, and having a role. I mean, having a it seemed very validating to, you know, spend all that time in school, come to a place with the you know, advanced degree in hand, and given the responsibilities of a faculty member, and this is something that I've been wanting. This has been a career goal since I was probably a third year undergrad. To really, you know, say I want to be a professor, and I want, you know, and so to then, you know, come to campus and go to a go to that first day startup meeting and be like, here I am. I'm a I'm an actual college professor. And so that was really very memorable.
Yeah, I feel you. Even though I'm not a faculty, but I feel at the startup, my first startup as well. So what do you see yourself in 5 years then?
I have, you know, some visions, some loose ideas about some things that I want to be working towards. But I think... ultimately, what I want to be able to say in 5 years is that I've been successful at making BSU a better place, and putting my expertise and specializations alongside other people on campus and their interest and expertise to make BSU inclusive and more excellent in the way that it is committed to student development and learning. I don't really have any, you know, I wouldn't say that I am looking at like any sort of, you know, advanced measure or anything like that. That's, you know, when people say, you know, 5 years, you know, it's like, where's my promotion, or like, how can I go to a better job, or something like that. And those aren't things that I'm thinking about. I just think that that's like the prototypical response oftentimes when you see the 5 years, 5 year plan. Obviously, I'm working towards tenure. So that's something that I hope to accomplish. And by 5 years down the road, hopefully at 5 years, I'll have, you know, been tenured for like 1 year already. And I also hope to, I would like to be able to have a consistent interested set of students who are who I am able to work with and generate research ideas and research projects about disability and disability topics. My lab, which I have which I started kind of last spring, is right now, it's referred to as the DARE lab. I don't know. That's not necessarily well advertised or anything like that. But it's the Diversity, Ableism, and Intergroup Relations Lab. So DAIR, DARE lab. And so I'm very interested in a wide variety of topics. But I think two things that really keep me interested are how do people think about ability and how does that relate to disability stigma?
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
The assumptions that we make about what people should be
sure.
as far as abled, that does transfer into thinking about people with disabilities as tragic or unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of a bigger abstract conceptual question. But other interests include just simply what are perceptions of disability like around BSU's
mm-hmm.
campus and around the Bemidji area?
Mm-hmm.
How can we change things to improve
right.
those attitudes and reduce stereotypes
sure.
And that sort of things? And then I'm also looking forward to building interest in or maintaining interest in the psychology of environmental sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
I'm teaching people in the environment psych perspectives next semester.
Yep. Yep.
And I hope that that will continue spring semesters moving forward. But there's a lot of overlap mutual, interest in accessibility and
mm-hmm.
sustainability. And I think that we need to be mindful of both when we're bringing up issues of accessibility. We need to talk about how will this be sustainable.
Yep.
And then also when we're talking about sustainability, we need to talk about how will that be accessible.
So what would you say be the most inspiring part of your job by far?
Inspiring. I think to me what inspiring, that's kind of an interpreting what does inspire mean? And I think to me it's kind of like what keeps you motivated.
Mm-hmm.
And what, keeps you
right.
moving forward. And I do think time spent with students in the classroom and in conversations with students, I think that that is a big motivator it keeps you moving, because I do think that I am always trying to do for students what was done for me, and that is
mm-hmm.
to spark an interest in something. I really, really enjoy talking about the things that I'm interested in,
mm-hmm.
and to try to convey that to students, that excitement.
Yeah. Sure.
I really, really love when I see students make connections to things that they
mm-hmm.
care about, and I think that's what is the most inspiring part of the job is when you see students who are
mm-hmm.
who say or give an indication that they see the importance or the impactfulness
mm-hmm.
of some of the things that we talk about in class.
Sure. So have you encountered any challenge on campus as having part of the identity as a person with disability?
That's a very interesting question and something that I often I think about it from time to time,
mm-hmm.
But I oftentimes, just need to put that away, in order
mm-hmm.
to continue and to maintain confidence and a sense of
right.
of advocacy in what I do. And I feel like this is something that is my area of research a lot of the times,
uh-huh.
and I would say it is something that is not necessarily unique to me.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that is a phenomenon that anyone who is stigmatized for
right.
a group identity
yep.
or an identity experiences
yes.
In different locations and depending on their relative value
mm-hmm.
Compared to, say, a majority group member.
Right, right, right.
And so one of the difficulties at BSU is being somebody with a visible physical disability.
Mm-hmm.
There's you know, I don't see anybody else like me.
Okay.
And I know that there might be a handful
mm-hmm.
on, but like, you know, when you think about it, when I'm going across campus using my wheelchair,
mm-hmm.
it's like I don't think I've ever encountered somebody else
mm-hmm.
using a wheelchair,
right.
You know,
right.
coming, passing me,
yeah.
Or anything like that. And so what that means for me is that I am, you know, it's constant visibility, or it's you know, you feel
mm-hmm.
that sense of difference just chronically. And I know that I know that that is something that students from racial minority backgrounds
mm-hmm.
oftentimes experience, students from international
mm-hmm.
backgrounds, LGBTQ students,
yeah.
you know, it's something that I think is widely, it's felt by people who have stigmatized
yeah.
identities, that chronic visibility, and you can't hide it.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for me as somebody with a physical disability, I can't hide
right.
That. And one of the, I guess, one of the saving graces, or one of the things that, like, it's kind of part of compensation or compensatory mechanism in my mind, is I pursued becoming a faculty member and
mm-hmm.
getting a PhD and all those things to balance out the equation
mm-hmm.
in my mind, 'cause I feel I oftentimes feel inadequate, or you know, I internalize the stigma
mm-hmm.
that I'm less valuable because of my disability. And so I wanted to compensate for that and be able to just have in my back pocket,
mm-hmm.
oh, I have a PhD and I'm a tenure track faculty member.
Right, right. 'Cause
I see that as like a respectable
right.
A position and something that, like, if somebody were to show me
mm-hmm.
pity, or show me, you know, that I can come back with, oh, I'm gonna break your expectations or your stereotypes
yep, yep.
of me with this credential.
Sure. Right.
And so in that sense, I kind of use my intellect and my, you know, all that as a shield
mm-hmm.
to buffer myself a lot of the times from those perceived slights, or that
yeah.
chronic visibility, because I know that I have credibility
right.
elsewhere. I know that I've been validated in
yeah.
other aspects of my life. I don't love that I do that, because I think that in many ways that's also buying into ableism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I have to show that I have merit
mm-hmm.
In order to be a valued person.
Yeah.
And that, why can't I just be a valued person because I'm a person?
Yeah.
People with disabilities are people.
Mm-hmm.
Just like any stigmatized group member is a person, and they
sure.
they deserve respect and dignity
yeah.
on that ground alone. But I feel like in many ways I buy into the ableism of I have to have some sort of productivity or
yeah.
Some sort of you know, merit
mm-hmm.
In order to deserve respect.
Sure.
And that is ableism through and through.
Yeah.
I don't love that. But I think another aspect of this is that Going through graduate school and going to my PhD program, I was given the leeway to do a lot of research on my own, and I spent the first 2 years of my PhD program reading widely outside of my discipline. I found this area of scholarship known as disability studies, and I was reading and consuming information from all of these people with disabilities, activists, historians, you know, literary scholars, cultural critics, all this kind of stuff. These were people with disabilities who had taken back the stigma of disability, and they were creating positive identity and culture around disability. And this was news to me. I'd spent 22 years unaware, or 23 years unaware that there was disability culture, or there's disability pride, or there was a history of people with disabilities who were, you know, fine. You know, they were fine. They were proud to be disabled. And so another way that I overcome challenges or overcome this, you know, stigma is feeling that I'm part of a group.
Right.
I'm part of this community.
Yeah.
And that, you know, even if they're not here at BSU, I imagine them to be here. And I feel connected to other people who face those similar challenges and share those challenges. And so I think that that is another way that you get through the day is, you know, leaning on those imagined, that community out there that's, you know, I don't have like them nearby, but I am able to be reassured that other people have this experience and they, you know, have the strength to do it. So I can share in that.
And what do you think of the need of promoting Disability Awareness Month on campus? And how do you see your role in this mission?
You know, Disability Awareness Month, I think, is a good idea. I think it's a good thing to at least designate it as such. I think that my role on campus, you know, extends beyond the month. But my role in you know, contributing to Disability Awareness Month is just to be able to offer a message from an insider, somebody with a physical disability, and be able to reorient people to the fact that people with disabilities are not it shouldn't be about, you know, what are we doing to treat people with disabilities, like you know, raise awareness about medical conditions or raise awareness about, like, you know, we need more treatment or we need more research into fixing people with disabilities. And so I think Disability Awareness Month should be seen in a very similar frame of mind as other months. So like Black History Month or Indigenous Peoples Month or, you know, and so you go down the line of these different recognition months.
Right.
And it needs to be just about, you know, what does this group, let's become aware of what this group has done for the country, what this group means for cultural contributions and history. And, yeah, let's look also about social disparities that exist today. So the fact that people with disabilities are three times more likely to be impoverished than non-disabled people, or that they are far less likely to graduate from college, even though that they might enter into college at with relative parity to non-disabled students. They don't graduate nearly as much. I mean, it's almost 3 to 4 times less likely for them to graduate. Employment disparities, healthcare disparities. You know, people with disabilities, if you look at them as a minority group, they are experiencing significant disparities, and there's a lot of reasons why that is. You know, some of it has to do with the impairment condition, you know, that one has. But at the same time, more of it has to do with policies that produce systemic discrimination. There's issues of institutional bias, of discrimination, of not understanding supports and accommodations. And so these are all things that we talk about in these other recognition months, raising awareness about the positive history and the recognition of contribution, but also to be able to recognize that this is a underpowered group that faces chronic discrimination and oppression. And it's, you know, a group that also intersects with all of the other groups. And that's something that we need to think about too, is what are the intersectional challenges of women with disabilities, people of color with disabilities, people with who are not cisgendered or not straight you know, there are these intersections of disability, and and so it's a very, I think we don't give it enough credit as a identity position that can generate extremely novel ideas, new solutions, new questions, and help us rethink a lot of the things that we do. So I think what I see my role as in like a Disability Awareness Month, or just I like to raise awareness of disability all the months, but it just is to bring what I feel is an oftentimes overlooked position. And I say that because I'm a person with a disability, and I have been a person with a disability since I was 16 months old. It took me 23 years to encounter disability-driven perspectives and theory and scholarship and social change mobilization. So I can only imagine that for people without disabilities around campus, you know, students, faculty, staff, they don't have these perspectives.
Yeah, so this will be the challenges for the development of disability of awareness, disability awareness in higher education.
Yes.
Is it safe to say that?
That is a big challenge. And unfortunately, there's we're at a different, there's differing levels of awareness around higher education.
Right.
We're getting better. You're getting more of this, these insights, more of the, I would say, larger universities have adopted disability studies programs, at least minor, where it's interdisciplinary scholarship, kind of a cultural studies type program, where you're taking on topics from the perspectives of people with disabilities and disability culture, both domestically and internationally. There's a lot more, I would say, connections being made between disability and things like global poverty, disability and economics. We're starting to see a little bit more of disabilities based
mm-hmm.
scholarship coming forward.
Yeah.
And that is the reason why that is because more people with disabilities
mm-hmm.
have been able to enter into academia, especially since the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Mm-hmm.
But even since the early 70s with the Section 504 of the Rehabilitation
mm-hmm.
Act, that led to non-discrimination against people with disabilities. That means that more disabled scholars
mm-hmm.
and students, I mean students become scholars,
mm-hmm.
More people with disabilities can enter into these
right.
spaces. And so we're experiencing, I think, a growing level of awareness
mm-hmm.
Of a variety of these different topics. I think it's just as a matter of how well does disability fit in with other diversity groups or other types of conversations
right.
About inclusion and belonging in
yeah.
in a university setting.
And is there any your least favorite things to see on campus?
Oh, I don't know about that.
So all good right now, right?
You know, I mean, we do have some significant challenges
mm-hmm.
with accessibility issues on campus, at least in terms of architectural accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing I can't overcome.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, when I mean, I don't know if that's the least favorite thing to see. That I don't know what, you know, snow and ice is my least favorite thing to see on campus. But in terms of the accessibility issue,
yeah.
I don't worry about me so much as
mm-hmm.
I worry about the student or the other faculty member or, you know,
right.
staff member who doesn't work here or who doesn't come here
uh-huh.
because of that.
Okay.
And so that's what I
mm.
kind of, whenever I encounter, you know, we're in Benson Hall right now and
yeah.
there's a, you know, underneath us is, tunnel system.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I have to go over to Memorial
mm-hmm.
To a meeting, you know, one of my least favorite things is having to forego taking the
yeah.
the tunnel over to Memorial and
yeah.
instead having to go over to Bridgeman and then outside and then
yeah.
through the
yeah.
you know up the ramp and
yeah.
and through between the unions and then over to Memorial from the outside.
Yeah.
And so that's like I'm dismayed every time that I have to do that because I'm using my wheelchair and it's really easy
mm-hmm.
to go through the tunnel over to Bridgeman. And I just, you know, sometimes I'm like, I just wish that, you know, I could just go over in that tunnel to Memorial and
uh-huh.
but no, there's like 15 stairs on the other
yeah.
end. Same way with, you know, if I had to go
right.
over to Decker,
yeah.
You know, so that's, you know, one of those things that, you know, there's certain places around campus where I sigh every time that I see them because it's just like, it could be different.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to think about the ways that accessibility is not just about people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Accessibility makes everybody's life better.
Mm-hmm.
And being proactive in thinking about accessibility and design, and that is, you know, it does lend itself to more equity and also more just peace of mind
mm-hmm.
For people.
Yeah.
I think you do see the difference between a the remodel of Benson Hall, fourth floor, where we are,
mm-hmm.
wider hallways, better lit, more friendly atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to get around and all that
right,
kind of stuff.
Right.
It does make a difference in your everyday
mm-hmm.
experience and it doesn't need to be just for people with disabilities. It's for
sure.
everybody.
Sure.
So when I see those, you know, issues and you know, like the stairs and that, those barriers that are around campus, I just think about, you know, these carry weight, these carry psychological weight for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And to disregard them or to diminish their importance, or, you know, I just, unfortunate, but that's the way that it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that, you know, I use that phrase a lot when I teach about legitimizing discrimination.
Uh-huh.
And so we need to be cautious when, you know, when we look around and say, well, that's unfortunate, but that's just the way that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a pathway to legitimizing different forms of discrimination.
Yeah.
And to saying that it's okay because, you know, what else are we going to do about it? I just,
yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, historically how a number of different groups
mm-hmm.
have been discriminated against, because it's kind of like, well, what else can we do about it? You know,
right.
Like women are ill-equipped biologically to be able to take responsibility for
uh-huh.
voting.
Uh-huh.
It's unfortunate, but what
right.
else are we going to do about it? And so, it takes some doing, and it is a challenge that is put before us. But as far as, you know, these types of things, you know, I feel very dismayed and sad every time that I have to say, well, it's unfortunate that this campus is
mm-hmm.
inaccessible, but that's just the way that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's,
yeah.
you know, part of, you know, what's my least favorite thing to see, you know, just that,
sure.
that consistent idea of,
mm-hmm.
you know, what are we going to do about it? You
mm-hmm.
know, what can we do about it? It is the way that it is.
Yeah.
I don't like feeling that way. Mm-hmm. I don't like feeling, in those instances, to feel helpless or feel
mm-hmm.
Like we can't do something about these things.
Got it. So what would be your one piece of advice for students with disability?
My piece of advice would be find each other. Find me, find, you know, people who are
mm-hmm.
who have been there before and have done that. I think it is remarkable the benefits of figuring out who your community is,
mm-hmm.
And understanding that there's nothing to be ashamed of, or there's
yeah.
nothing to be down on yourself about.
Mm-hmm.
Also read books about your community.
Mm-hmm.
Read books about people who have been there before.
Mm-hmm.
There have been people with physical and mental disabilities
mm-hmm.
For as long as humans have been around.
Mm-hmm.
And only in the last, you know, probably 100 years or even less than that, has there been a groundswell of people who have shared their experiences
yeah.
in a way that, you know, normalizes them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are a tremendous amount of memoirs and publications and all that you read and you hear yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have the words to describe what
yeah.
your experience has
yeah.
has been, and you develop a vocabulary. And a way of talking about your experience
yeah.
that is more meaningful and helps you to anticipate challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think both finding other people
mm-hmm.
Who share the experience with you, and then also just finding those people that came before,
mm-hmm.
that were willing to normalize their experience.
Sure.
And I think those are two big things that I wish that I would have had more of when I was an undergrad,
because mm-hmm.
I was stuck in the, you know, the mindset of trying to prove to everybody that I wasn't disabled, and,
mm-hmm.
and trying to be like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I distanced myself from other people with disabilities, because
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be seen that way.
Yeah.
And so I think it takes a lot of courage, and I think it
For
takes
sure.
a lot of self-reflection.
Yeah, to know yourself more.
To know yourself more.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, ultimately, a goal should be to not separate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We oftentimes, as people with disabilities, we oftentimes are in a position where we have to divide our sense of self,
mm-hmm.
Where part of our self always needs to be
right.
disavowed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you say, I'm not my disability, or I'm not,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's just like a little, vestigial tail kind of thing. I don't really know what it's about. It's just over here on the side,
yeah,
and I'm not part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is. It's part of you. It is part of you, mentally or physically.
Mm-hmm.
It is part of you, and being able to create a self that is large enough to include that in a way that you don't feel ashamed, or you don't
mm-hmm.
feel threatened by that, I think is a tremendous goal,
mm-hmm.
a personal goal. And it's something that I continue. Certainly, I'm not saying that I've got it figured out
right.
personally. Like I just said, I go around campus and I feel hyper visible,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like I need, I've done things in my life that
mm-hmm.
that have been motivated to develop walls around
mm-hmm.
myself,
mm-hmm.
and not for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not 100%, you know, okay with myself as a disabled person.
Uh-huh.
But I've spent the last 10 years of my life trying to catch up.
Yeah.
And trying to figure that out. I mean,
yeah.
Like it or not, we live in a culture that values ability.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are constantly in a culture where you're hearing that you're less than
mm-hmm.
because you have a disability. And I think, it takes finding other people and finding the disability community to
mm-hmm.
put up any sort of
right.
buffer between you and that message.
Yeah.
So find each other. Certainly you can come find me. I'm in Benson Hall. What is this, 401? Yeah, I think I'm
yeah.
in 401. I teach in 413. That's what I was thinking. I can recommend books. There's books at the library, I think.
Yeah.
That can get you started on this path. It's worthwhile.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.